It's time for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So strap yourselves in as we meet the Let's Go gang.
Hello.
Anthony. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Greetings, comrades.
And me, Brian. But first, the week in Mr. Osamatsu news.
So, oh, yeah.
Man, first off, it is all gone down.
Crunchyroll turned out to be on the list of things which were going to have the episode taken down. And so the episode has been taken down.
Just like they promised.
You missed it out.
I'm not saying I want to suggest piracy, but now it's a rare fucking gem. So
find it out and deserve it.
How on earth are people going to find out how to watch that?
Yeah, pretty much.
And the other bit of Mr. Osamatsu news is season 2 was confirmed and it starts straight after season 1 in January.
It won't be stopped. You can try your best, but it will not be contained.
How many more episodes do you think they'll get banned? Or get in trouble for at the very least?
Well, we shall see. We shall see. But on with the reviews. So, I'm going to start off with something originally planned to have as a Dynamite in the Brain episode, where it would be me, Anthony, and Greg talking about all the films we saw at Leeds Film Festival.
But Anthony bought a watch.
Turned out... Yes.
That's not the pure reason, just the reason.
And Greg couldn't afford to stay in a hotel on his own. So only Brian went, and he only went to see 3 of the 5 films. Because it was raining. I didn't fancy much the last 2 films. But what I did see was The Case of Hannah and Alice, which I went into with low expectations, and it's really, really good. It's not great, but it's really, really good. Mm. I hadn't realised it was a sequel to the 2004 live-action film Hannah and Alice.
Oh.
And because it's a prequel, it makes sense that they went with animation and rotoscoping.
Because the people are older?
Yes, because people
okay.
are 10 years older rather than 1 year younger.
Right.
I've never seen that film. I quite want to see the film now because this is really funny. It's a really funny film. It's just there's the thing which stops it being great is the technique they use. There's like little niggles where you wish, I wish you'd done more of that thing when there's like a sudden burst of stuff which looks really hand-drawn.
Right, right.
And there's like little discrepancies you might notice because of the way they shot it with I assume rotoscoping plus CG plus hand-drawn animation.
Right.
Like, there's a bit where somebody sets a jumper down on a bench and then the shot changes and the jumper's disappeared. Presumably because they...
Oh,
because
they got lost in between
got
the
lost in between,
animation.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And is it obvious? Well, it must be obvious. If you've spotted
yes.
it. I'm not saying you wouldn't normally spot, but, you know.
But yeah, I quite like the rotoscoping. It does have a little bit of that thing which that...
Flowers of Evil.
No, not Flowers of Evil, the other rotoscoped thing which came after that. The one about the guy travelling back in time and replacing Oda Nobunaga. Where sometimes it looks a bit like people wearing masks.
Right.
Whereas Flowers of the Evil's got the opposite problem where there's too much movement all the time.
I love Flowers of Evil. I do.
Talking of things which weren't as bad as they looked... this thing looked pretty bad. Raku and Suiho expelled from paradise. And don't get me wrong, it's full of anime bullshit. It's the sort of thing where you go, why anime? Why are you doing this?
It is your arch enemy Gen Urobuchi at the helm.
Oh.
It is, yeah. But it does some things you're not expecting. And at the end, it feels like a trick to... attract people who are attracted by scantily clad anime girls into watching something which then delivers this fairly anti-right-wing monologue.
Oh, well, that's not too bad.
I mean,
generally, these things are for, you know, it's totally serious, you guys, but seriously, like, titties, yeah. Actually. That's what we're here for.
But no, it starts off with, we're here with for the titties, but surprise, here's some social satire.
Well, if you rebel against a right wing regime, you will get boobs in return. It seems like a fair trade. Huh?
Well, no, the boobs are part of the right wing regime.
Oh, they're part of the establishment.
Forbidden.
Moral dilemma.
Forbidden. It makes a smaller world more alluring.
Yeah.
Okay.
The boobs are distributed by this right-wing regime.
They are the nation's boobs. They will be shared among citizens equally.
No, that'll be communism. That's different.
Well, I think it's more like the harder you try this right-wing regime, the better boobs you'll have. If indeed you'll have boobs at all.
I'm confused.
Oh, what's that?
So it's like a capitalist boobocracy.
Okay. Yeah, this isn't really what the point it's making, but this is extrapolating its point into a comic sense.
You said this was quite good.
No, I said it's better than I expected.
Oh, so it didn't mean it's...
Yeah.
And if you expected it to be utter shite, then yeah, yes. Okay.
Yeah, the visual style put you off, I bet it did.
It did, but it's weird. It's got like two visual styles going on at once, which makes sense in the context of the universe.
Mm.
But one is very much there to give you a load of anime bullshit. But yeah, so I'd say Hannah and Alice is worth going and watching in the cinema. I'd say Raku and Suiho Expelled from Paradise is worth watching if it appears on Netflix. I wouldn't buy it, but if it's
right.
There, that's the boob.
Check
one.
It out, because it.
Oh, so you think I should watch Boob, the boob one? All right.
Yes, because it's
not bad.
Better than if you watch the trailer or you watch the just look at the image, you'll think that looks kind of stinky, or you might think, "Oh, that looks exactly my sort of thing. I'm a big creep." Either way, I think it's worth checking out on Netflix. If you don't like it, you can switch it off, and you've not paid for it outside of your general Netflix subscription. Mm. I wouldn't buy it on Blu-ray or DVD, no.
Would it be worth getting, if you haven't already got one, a subscription to Netflix to watch it?
No. As a curiosity, it's worth watching, I think.
Okay.
Or at least checking it. I would say don't watch it all the way through, because if it's not your sort of thing, then don't bother. But if you can pull up with the anime bullshit, then it's got some interesting ideas. Whether you think they're executed well or not might be another matter, but it has a nice twist on sort of what you're expecting from that sort of film.
Hmm.
And finally, Miss Hokusai is excellent. You should go and watch that in the cinema as soon as you get off.
See, they were the ones I voted for, okay. I'm sure. So the ones you liked, the ones were on my vote.
Yeah, the only one which was on my vote was Miss Hokusai, because that was kind of the thing I wanted to see more than anything at the moment, except The Boy and the Beast, which for some reason wasn't even there. I suspect a distribution situation.
Okay.
Because it's like those three were all from Anime Limited, and then the other two, which I didn't see, were the new Ghost in the Shell film, and Empire of Corpses were courtesy of Funimation.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I've been hearing the Empire of Corpses thing. It was already... because like Manglobe went bankrupt, there was just basically rushed out into cinemas then. Had to like finish off quickly. Also I heard it was like the book is based upon the author he wrote three pages and then died. So they had to finish off the story in the film in their own way.
So unfinished like from the get go and unfinished in the end as well. Fuck.
Mm.
Plus, I'd been burned by hell last year, so I wasn't going to sit through 2 hours for film by that guy.
He's not the guy who died, is he?
Well, I said, it's not Manglobe, is it? It's Wit, isn't it? Studio Wit.
Yeah, well, there's sort of like Studio. The Empire of Corpses film is like this one we part of like a film series based on the books by the same guy, and we're going to put out a different one for October, but that's been made by Manglobe, but then Manglobe went bankrupt, so they couldn't finish it. So who's next in line? Studio Wiz. Okay, you guys, you're trying to go to fill this slot for October for us now. Finish it up right now. And that's the film they got then.
Hmm.
But yeah, Miss Hokusai is really good. It's only 95 minutes as well. It's kind of vignettes of sort of stages of the daughter of the artist Hokusai's life in the 19th century.
Hmm.
And if you're looking for like a one overriding plot, there's not really, there kind of is one there, but it's not, it's more sort of setting the mood of this time and of these characters.
So would it be better as like a series or?
Well, it was a manga series, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, but I quite like this. I quite like this in the same way I like the Saint Young Men movie. It's just happy to be what it is.
Just people faffing around working works out pretty good. Okay.
And it kind of does a good job of making these characters who lived in the 19th century relatable as to modern times. It's like, it's not trying to make this look like a magical time or some sort of historical hell or something. It's very relatable as a modern human being.
Right, okay.
Mm. Does like the woodblock printing have any kind of influence on the visuals of it?
Occasionally, yes.
Mm. Okay.
When it wants it to be. One particular case is definitely done for that effect.
Yeah, there seems to be no destroying on this. Obviously, there's the life of this fake very well-known artist and his daughter as well. Like, you know, I imagine some of that would have to come in there a bit.
Mm. What was the audience like? Anyone in cosplay or anything?
No.
I don't know. I think one year when me and Greg show up in cosplay, there's going to be cosplayers.
You're going to change it, are you? Flip it around.
There's Miss Hokusai and her father.
I still managed to end up sat next to somebody who was talking loudly about Evangelion. Evangelion wasn't even being shown.
Were you on the top deck?
All right.
That's your deck.
The best bit was when the guy who's there always doing the introductions said, told people downstairs to go up to the top deck, and the people on the top deck started shushing him. It's just don't tell them about it.
Corporate boss. Pay for this is extra money.
It's true though. He did that. He did it last year. I was thinking, oh, friggin' big mouth. But then again, you still don't get that many people come up, so it's not too bad. Too bad.
Right. Let's get into this week's anime. And we'll start with, well, it's not really this week's. It's a few weeks ago at this point, but we're slowly catching up. Lovely Muko, episode 2. Let's go for a car ride. Muko becomes the wind. Anthony, as you asked specifically for this, take it away. We've given us the audience a brief description of what happens in this episode.
Well, as we've mentioned, or at least I've mentioned to someone, it's only 12 minutes long. So it's the perfect length. Not too short, not too long. And it opens with Muko. She's playing with a ball and she's sliding around. She's having a lot of fun. And Komatsu comes out and says, oh, you're covered in mud. Your stomach's got mud on it. You're going to have to get a bath. And Komatsu throws the ball. I thought he was just trying to get rid of it. And he throws it over at the top of the roof of the house. And it rolls back down. And Muko is quite impressed by this and all that jazz. And he says, oh, do you want to play, Muko? And she says yes. Obviously, he can't understand and so on. But he throws it up again and it gets stuck. And that is kind of the first little bit.
You missed the best bit of the first bit. Is this because Muko's like really excited that she's invented this game that she's playing with this ball, and then stops to think about what she's going to call the game and decides it's going to be called Komatsu.
She does love Komatsu. It is her owner after all. Mm. But then they go inside, and for once, Komatsu lets her into the gallery, I take it, because, you know, he is a glass blower after all. And he lets her in, and she's all excited because she rarely gets to go in this room. And Komatsu's feeling down because, you know, the gallery isn't getting much business. There's not many punters coming along. And Muko notices this with her dog's intuition and makes a jump to, well, I don't know, to hug him or, you know, to embrace him, to give him a bit of affection. And she breaks something. So that's the end of that little chapter. And they decide to go out on a little car ride. And I seem to have missed something at this point, because they're driving along, Muko's extremely excited, and there's like a girl on the side of the road, and Muko puts down the window with the automatic, you know, the button, and it goes down, and Komatsu tells her off. Not in a bad way, because he's very soft with her, really. And she puts it back up, and at the end of the episode, she's got her nose stuck in the window.
Well, no, see, Muko thinks that the little girl has done some sort of magic to make the door come.
I didn't see that bit.
It's a dog barking out the window at strangers, and it's like, oh my god, the stranger's making the window open.
I see.
Yeah.
Just go like, Komatsu, we're in danger. I was like, oh, what's that, Muko? You're seeing a lot of people outside the window.
But the moral of the story is, we all need to be more like Muko.
What? Get our noses
well,
caught
less
in the window.
Of that and more of just loving life. There is not a happier character in anything that we have watched ever.
It does most of the characters in. Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah, it's just have perhaps have the happiest opening theme.
Oh, yes. Everything about it is such. It's so feel good. I don't know if I could watch it an episode straight after another one, because I think it is a 1 week wonder. I think if I was forced to watch like a series in a night.
You're not going
to
binge watch it.
I think even with a group fueled by alcohol, it wouldn't even be that good. Well, actually, that would be probably quite fun, actually.
12 minutes a week is enough.
I do love a shiny nose. It does a little Mario coin collection sound. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot that was all over this episode. But, yeah.
She's got a very shiny nose, and she thinks everything in his gallery isn't quite as shiny.
And I guess in theory it'd be good for learning basic Japanese, because a lot of the words they say are spelt out for you in Japanese on the screen.
Which... I'm too busy looking at Muko's big grin to be looking at that. Okay, here's a question, actually. It's just occurred. I take, obviously, Komatsu doesn't understand Muko, but I'm presuming Muko doesn't understand him either.
I think that's correct, yes.
Yeah, sometimes it seems to be she understands him, but it's only like in context of what they both say. Yeah.
So just to add another little bit of icing into it.
That reminds me of one of my favourite jokes. You know, Edo Rocket, which is by the same guys who did, who were doing Concrete Revolutio. There's one episode where a bunch of the characters get turned into cats, and they assume, based on fiction, that as cats they'll be able to talk to each other, and then they can't understand each other because they're cats. Cats can't talk to each other.
Yeah,
and even if they could, you're humans. Why would we be able to understand what they were saying?
Very good, very good. But yeah, I like this. I still like it. Look, and I mean. It's not the best, but it still brings me back each week.
Yeah, I think it'd be hard going watching a full half hour episode of it, but as you say, 12 minutes is just right for it.
Mm.
Anything else before we move on to Dragon Ball Super? What? How did this get back in here?
Oh, well, you guys, I'm sorry, I've got a problem. Like, don't know about you, more always like great new cartoons are out, but. I know, there's something just drew me back to Dragon Ball Super back to that world. I thought, okay, now that the recap arc is over, maybe now I can get back on to kind of doing the wacky, super-powered family humor we experienced in the first, second episode. Maybe get back onto that a bit. And they have, pretty much.
Yeah, they really have. Right, so here's what you do, right? You watch it to just before this show. You watch it just before Battle of Gods, then watch that movie, then you watch these episodes. That's the right way to do it. These are good again.
The Dragon Ball Super episode 15 is a Mr. Satan episode.
Yeah. I still get, like, he's fun, and he is Joestar, so that's great, but he's kind of a dick. it's like, I hope I don't get caught, and people realize I'm not actually the strongest person on Earth, and I actually kind of suck.
He's got, a media empire to... it's got, like, it passes all down to his daughter, who's got his grandchild on the way, so he's got to think of the future, man. You know, he's thinking of playing the long game here. This can't just toss a cash, can't fall down now. He's got to do his best to keep it up. He tries his best. Because he's basically like holding a press conference talking about, the strange vibrations that were caused by Goku and Beerus's fight in outer space that almost destroyed the universe. But then suddenly stopped, and they ascertained that, Mr. Satan, the strongest man in the world, must have done something to stop this disaster from happening. So he's holding a press conference, relaying his version of events as palatable to his audience.
Yeah, as more palatable to me. Like, that was super fun. It's just like, okay, so I was fighting this guy in space, and he looked like a cat, but he was actually a demon with devil wings and shit. And then I became a god, so... And he turned Super Saiyan? Ah, it's beautiful.
So I told his mustache...
So did his mustache. Now we finally know. Yeah. Mustaches also go Super Saiyan. Finally.
If only Nappa were still here, you would have seen this. However, as well as that now, some ambassadors from the Plaid Stack have arrived on Earth looking for the one who saved the universe and ostensibly that they're planning to do in the bargain from the threat of God destruction. And I think, Mr. Satan, of course. if we thank you, we should give you the Medal of Honor. But in their party, they also have like the strongest warrior of Planet Stack. And he's like, wait a minute, if he's a true hero, he will face me in a fight. I will prove his skills right here in the ring. And Mr. Satan's going like, I can't fight this guy. What am I going to do?
Oh, these are all lion men, by the way.
Yes.
They're blue lion men. And the guy who comes out who's like the diplomat is really embarrassed because he's really gruff looking and looks like he hasn't shaved in days. And he's like, why do I look so tough? I'm only I'm an ambassador of peace. Yes. I can't help it. Also, they do a little weird dance.
They dance to Dance of the Peoples.
Like a Ginyu Force kind of dance. So.
Yeah, a very, very, very silly dance to thank him. It's their it's their planet's highest honor, apparently.
Mr. Satan tries every trick in the book. He tries to fix stomach cramps and diarrhea, trying to get out of it.
While he's in the toilet, he's calling everyone on the phone. He's like, why doesn't Vegeta pick up?
That's what Vegeta is stood on top of a rock in the canyon, like brooding over how I get stronger. He's been there for days, apparently, because there's like dust blowing around this canyon, and it's up to his like ankles almost.
Yeah, I think he's trying to get stronger by weathering the weather. The cold doesn't seem to bother him, but the heat does. So it just keeps cutting back to him, and it's a different weather system hitting him on that same rock.
Yeah. I mean, the background of all this, go get a job, of course.
Yeah.
So he, because he got a grandchild on the way, so now he got to work twice as hard and be a good granddad to it.
Is me or is Chi-Chi getting more and more of a dick as she goes? Because it's like, he's been a fighter all his life. He's been trained since a little kid to be a fighter, and he's, you know, got raised generations of fighters, and he saved the world by fighting. That's all he knows, Chi-Chi.
Yeah. Also, didn't he just get 50 bajillion space dollars from Mrs. Satan in the first episode? So it should be like set for life.
Yeah. Apparently she's spent it all already, which I can't even think on what.
I don't know. Probably on food because, you know, while she's out shopping in town getting supplies, make sure that Vegeta and Gohan are okay for food because I don't know why, because again, Gohan is now married into like another family of millionaires. Someone got Piccolo to come along and carry the shopping for her. I don't know why. Yeah.
I mean, like, he's wondering himself and it's like, well, you've eaten dinner at our house, so you have to carry home all this shopping. And he's like, that doesn't even make goddamn sense. But, you know, he can't really argue with her. No one seemed to be able to.
So Goku was back out on the field in the tractor, but it broke down, so he brought it into the sea to get it fixed.
Figured Mr. Satan could fix it?
Yeah. you are a guy who has money. Maybe you know how to do this.
Yeah.
And Mr. Satan was like, hot dang, this is my luck right now. Okay, okay, hero plan snack. You know, if you want to fight me, you're going to have to fight my apprentice first, you know, and then we'll see if you're good enough to face me and manage to cajole Goku and get into the ring. Fighting a guy? Jeez, thank goodness for this. I'm dumb and I tried to, man, so boring. However, he gets to me. He's just about to kind of start off when he sees that Chi Chi and Piccolo walking by the shopping mall and saying, Goku, are you not out in the field, that tractor, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, Chi-Chi, oh no. Mr. Satan, punch me in the face right now, okay? Why am I doing it? I'm busted, man. I gotta get out of here, okay? I don't want people to know the crowd that also I can fly. So Satan goes, okay, Satan, punch. And Goku just goes like flying. Oh no, you got me.
He flies from the stage over the crowd into the background sort of thing and then grabs his tractor and then proceeds to jump and fly over the building a second time. And it's just like, that is the worst acting I've ever seen. It's beautiful.
It's so now, like, for Simmons, he's got to fight for real. And so they set to fight, and then, like, you know, the guy, the hero class that's coming at him, and it's like, Mr. Satan is in his mind, you know, back then in the boat, when the universe is about to explode, and I sent her my daughter to protect her, and I guess the power of my love for her stopped it. Maybe that'll happen again. Okay, believe yourself, Satan. Let's do this. And then, but from between his legs, or I forget where it comes from, but like a dog appears. The same dog that apparently is the one by Majin Buu.
Yeah, it was in Mr. Satan's card. It went with him to the press conference. Yeah, that dog, the telescope dog. I don't know what to call it.
The dog appears and... Wouldn't you know it's the arch enemies of the people of Planet Snack, who they're deathly afraid of, look just like dogs, because I guess they're being lions and cats, they must be afraid of dogs. And
Yeah.
The hero's like, no, 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 no. And he just runs out the other way, and they just get out of here, like, immediately. And it's like, wow! Like, Mr. Satan is true, like, that one punch right there, and it immediately just, like, made a hero plant like this cower before him. He's so strong. Wow, okay, well done. You're clearly the real deal. Had a Medal of Honor. You've saved the universe.
Because I did like the way, actually, the dog gave him the medal in the end. But, yeah, I did like the crowd at one point where, like, Mr. Satan's just running away from this giant catman. Maybe he's not all that. And he's like, oh, shit. It was a pretty good episode of just Mr. Satan, like, being really bad at faking being really good. Also, yeah, the kind of, it kept him back to Gohan, who's being, like, I guess he wants to do all the cooking and the housework and everything, but he's also useless at all of this.
Yeah, I thought... Vita isn't made of glass, Gohan.
She can fly and shit, so she's probably pretty strong.
Yeah.
But I guess they've forgotten that. Second episode's also pretty fun.
Yeah.
That's where Krillin initially starts hanging out with Goku. He's like, hey, Goku, you know the way you're like the strongest person in the universe? I want to see if I still got it. Punch me in the face. Do it. They're like two drunk dads, just like, yeah, come on, I can take it. He's like, are you sure? Because I'm not gonna hold back now. And he's like, yeah, fucking do it. Fucking do it. When he hits him, he goes flying so goddamn far. And he flies ahead of him. Yeah, through a couple of things. And then he tries to catch him. And then he, like, misses by at least a couple of meters. And he slams, Krillin slams into a rock. And initially, like, his wife's giving out to him later. But she's kind of like, you know, I'm glad you still got it, Krillin. Because you could take a punch from Goku in the face. I mean, like, it knocked right the fuck out. I messed up his face pretty bad, but it's still impressive.
Poor Krillin. It's kind of like, no, remember the good old days, Goku, when you and me like, used to be equals, no?
And yeah, now, it actually cuts back to that kind of animation as well, where they have the, yes. you know the old Dragon Ball run where their legs just go flailing every which direction? Yeah, back to those kind of...
You and me were two separate ways, no. I kind of settled down in a family. You became, gained the power of a god, you know. But, you know... That's the best buzz after all that time. It's pretty good, isn't it? Now, the other story in this episode. Bulma and Whis having regular meetings to go and sample all the best foods in town.
Go ahead. Oh, sorry. You just stopped there. I liked her, Bulma's logic. It's like, right, if I can get friends with Whis... then if the Earth's destroyed, at least I can save myself and my kid. I was like, yeah, that's not bad. It's like, if you get friendly with Whis, he'll probably go like, oh, I'll protect you and take you off this planet and presumably dump you on some other one. But, you know, it's a pretty good plan.
Buddies.
Yeah. when Vegeta finds out as well, he's disgusted that she's been having lunch with Whis all this time. Because he's just been standing on a rock trying to get strong.
I forget how to feel them, like, you know, like, Whis, I want to fight Beerus, you fought him before, it didn't work out for you. I want to try him again, I got a good feeling this time. One saying, well, you could fight Beerus, or I don't know. You should know that, you know, I am actually, you know, his master. I'm stronger than he is. And so I taught him everything he knows. And
so yeah. Like,
in that case, Whis, train me, I demand it right now. I'm saying, no, I'm not going to.
I liked Whis's thing of like, I'll train you if you become the god of destruction. And instead of Vegeta going like, haha, I'll be evil again, he's like, I'll take you to the best restaurant I know. Whis is like, yeah, okay. That works too.
Okay. Okay. Here's the best ramen restaurant in town. It's like, no, sorry, me and Bubba were there last week. Okay. Here's this guy with the best takoyaki in the place of bad. No, we were just here this morning, actually. One said, in that case, I will make you lunch with my own hands. And we get to witness Vegeta, atomic Superman from outer space, starting to break an egg.
Yeah, he's too powerful to, like, crack an egg properly.
He didn't have the finesse to do it.
Yeah, that's very fine work. That's pretty great. And the actual thing of what apparently is the ultimate food on planet Earth, given all cultures and foods, mostly Japanese foods, but still all kinds of foods from planet Earth, what is the ultimate kind of food, most tastiest food you can possibly get on planet Earth, Niall?
It is the one and only instant pot noodle.
Yes. Apparently, pot noodles are great.
Ooh.
I mean, that looked like a nice one, but I don't know how they got the beef in there. Because that looked like a fried steak. Like,
well, it's beef asterisk. I would say.
Yeah, so that convinces Whis to train Vegeta. The instant noodles.
Off they go. Vegeta gets sent off there with like a, I guess from like a, one of those big like bindles, you know, like that robbers have in Japanese cartoons.
Oh yeah, but he has.
I'm guessing those are full of pot noodles as well.
Probably just to keep his training going.
A new costume because, like, you know, Bulma's like, you know, if you're going to go off train with, like, you know, with powerful beings in the universe, you're not going to go off on that ratty fun Saint Amber one. It's a brand new one. It fits it better.
She was given out to him earlier, a la kind of Chi-Chi thing, and it makes you think, is he just got a thing against nagging wives or something? Because it's like, Vegeta, you're coming home now and you're dragging mud all through the place. Because he has just been standing on a rock for several days. He's just covered in dirt and everything. But she actually gives a fuck about him, and she's giving him new armor and stuff, so it's just Chi-Chi who's a dick. But, yeah, these are fun. If the show had been this the whole time, I don't think we probably would have stopped.
No, it was really good. There's even like a good, but like Goku was obviously off just doing nothing all day, and he comes home in the nighttime to see like Chi Chi and Goten sitting down for dinner, and it's like, I didn't go out and do any work today. I can't come home now. She's been getting mad at me. She's just outside his own house at night, just peering in the window. Oh man, I'm missing dinner right now. I can't go now. She yell at me.
Again, it's like you said, Niall, it's the sitcom we kind of wanted. So, yeah, pretty great.
The episode after that, too, is pretty good.
The
wee baby pan is finally born. So you get a bit of kind of, like, humor with that. But it's also kind of leading into the Resurrection of F recap thing. So that's what we should watch next episode if you want to, but don't go any further than that because we're ending into recap territory. But it did have the promise of Fat Beerus finally showing up. I haven't watched it.
Fat Beerus is all we ever wished for. dear.
Okay, let's go now to Mr. Osamatsu, episode 6, which was It's a Birthday Party, Dajo, and Iyami's Great Discovery. So, in the first half, it's an episode all about Hatabo, a guy who we've not seen since the very first episode. The little boy with the umbrella haircut and the flag in his head. And he's invited them to a party. And apparently they've not seen him for ages either. And it turns out that he's now super, super, super rich. And it also, he apparently has not aged at all.
Yeah, he's still a little grim. Kid.
And yes, he apparently earns all this money by being an information broker.
Oh my God.
It sounds very shady.
As we see him helping out President Obama.
Yep.
Which they've cleverly disguised by not looking like him and having a mustache.
But everybody still says, Obama! Obama!
With the flag, we're having a first Jewish economic crisis.
What was his solution? Hot dogs, was it?
Yeah, American hot dogs. It's like, oh, genius! Fantastic!
Of course, that'll solve all the world's economic problems.
Yeah, and so he offers to give them money, but Chorobatsu is appalled at his brothers just taking whatever money they want. And he says you should employ us instead. And so he agrees to that. And there's only one thing, no interviews or tests are required.
Yeah, just have to do the thing that the prior employees we've seen have.
Yes. And that is to have a flag hammered into your head.
This is cringe. I was like wincing a little bit just at the idea. Ooh, I don't like this.
Shit.
The punchline is so great. I don't really want to spoil it.
No. Yeah, that's fair. I did like the butlers and maids that were in it earlier. The whole thing, it was like, well, if you'll just come with me, Jinamatsu, I'll show you to the bathroom. It was like, actually, I'm Totomatsu. It's like, oh, and they keep shooting each other in the back of the head with rocket launchers every time they make a mistake.
It's like, mistakes will not be tolerated. You have offended our guests.
And the last one kills them, kills herself.
Well, yeah, they were all dead at that stage. So. Yeah, that part was pretty fucking great. The weird birthday party as well. Because it was, it was an archery contest. And the comedian that they had, started pole dancing. Yeah. I was just very like, what is happening right now?
It was like, so I don't know, was he like a real like guy? It was like, hello, I am Tachi Hiro. I am here to set up a birthday party.
Is that a reference?
Yeah, I assume he probably was. I assume it must be, yes.
Yeah, I figure he must be a comedian or something.
Because
they
were impressed that he was friends with him.
And he also gets in the pole dancing as well.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and even Obama's English wasn't too appalling either.
No, it was. I was surprised at how good it was.
Not as good as the French.
Oh,
though,
je t'aime.
Yes.
So, Ayahami's great discovery. This is, as promised, an Ayahami-focused episode. Mm. And we discover that he is basically homeless, living under a bridge. He's having very poor luck. Goes to the races. But yeah, the races is...
The horse races bit is amazing, yeah.
Yes. Where the first horse he bets on goes so fast, it breaks time and space.
And that doesn't count as passing the finish line, yeah.
The second one he bets on blows up at the finish line. And the third one wins, but is then disqualified for being a centaur.
Ah, that was good.
And also, Matthew was there as well, and his horses keep winning, and he's kind of going, stupid Yami, stop betting horses that they explode. Stop betting horses that break a lot of time and space. Stupid Yami, what are you doing?
And he feels sorry for him. He's like cheering when his horse wins the third time. A fucking centaur.
But, Hatsubo apparently has been on a visit to various shrines to try and turn Yami's look around. And it doesn't look like it is. He gets into a fight with a cat over some food which has been dropped.
On the ground,
by
a
Chibita, yes.
it's like, I think it's a boiled egg or something, and it falls in not the reservoir, but the river.
Canal.
Yeah, yeah. And he pulls it out. He jumps in, and even the cat's like, fuck, dude, come on, it's just an egg. But he pulls it out and he's like, I got it. He bites into it, breaks one of his own signature three front teeth.
See, I think very he pulled out a stone instead, by mistake.
Yes, yeah. He did.
Yeah.
Egg-shaped stone. And so, yeah, they take him to,
face?
Decapan. And he runs a test on his teeth and he discovers that it's got this super strong metal has been discovered. It only exists in Iyami's teeth.
If it was actually a rare metal, yeah. If it was a rare metal, wouldn't that make it like radioactive or something? Isn't that the deal with them?
Believe so.
No,
yeah.
I don't know.
But apparently, it's good for everything. This metal, yeah.
Mm. But it will be chipped by a stone.
It'll even be used. But it can even be used in Chinese medicine. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's poor.
Turns everything around for him. He becomes very rich. Still living under a bridge, though.
Yeah. I mean, living much nicer under a bridge.
He's got like a throne. He has all the food he can eat. He still lives under the bridge with a red carpet and he's wearing a cape and a crown and stuff. It's like, he's moving to my big house, but okay.
And then he gets a message from the president of France saying if he's willing to give France the secret of ER metal, he can come and live there. So his dreams, has finally come true. But then this thing, which had been set up all the way through this story.
Yeah. Dad playing,
catch with the kids.
Yeah.
And then the kid suddenly throws it, like it turns into a demon in his face and throws this ball as hard as he possibly can. The dad dodges and it hits the army and knocks the final tooth, the last tooth he'd got.
Because he'd already mined the rest of them, yeah.
Yes. Goes flying. In the ridiculous. And then all the things they hadn't set up happen.
Yeah, and then a bunch. Like, hold on. I know there's an eagle involved, but there's a bunch of things happen.
The cricketer or baseball player. And...
Yeah, Junichi Matsu's there, takes a swing at it with his baseball bat, misses. A footballer comes in, kicks it. An eagle catches it.
The cat pushes it away.
The cat knocks it off the top of the freeway, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the eagle grabs it.
And then drops it in the volcano.
Yeah.
The volcano.
And this is all going on to like a pseudo James Bond theme as well.
Beautiful.
And then he's trying to find fake teeth, and he eventually goes to France. But it turns out, much to the French president's dismay, that he now has wooden teeth.
He doesn't even get a step foot on the ground in the Paris, or well, or French ground, French soil.
Even when the president's beating him up, the president says "Je t'aime," and then as the president wanders off, he's what's he say? He's like some sort of pseudo French.
It's like blur, 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 blur. It's just gibberish as far as Well, that sounds French enough.
Oh, it's so great! I love this, particularly that last bit and the horse bit. It's just like such a succession of gags.
There was a really lot of nice things just set up and kind of building on. I even like the thing of finally his line. I was like, but I just got back from France. Makes sense for once. Cause he did actually just get back from France.
It's just like the non sequitur was in full gear in this and also in the previous segment. It's just like the last thing that's going to happen is that it will happen. out of nowhere. And that's good. Like, you know, some people can kind of go, oh, it's too random. You can't get invested in it. But, you know, so while it's doing these bizarre things, though, it is still like, you know, a structure underneath, though. Like, I the dad and his kid playing baseball. It's interwoven into the thing.
Anytime it cuts back to Yami living under the bridge, it shows a shot of them playing baseball.
I think you're right. I think it always shows them first, and then the camera moves to them.
Yeah, pans across from because they're playing it down by the canal. Yeah, clever. Good stuff.
Yeah, there's excellent stuff. Clive's getting a second series.
Yeah, absolutely. Was the theme song all Yami song this time? The ending theme, because it didn't actually have an opening theme on this one.
No, it didn't.
I can't remember.
It didn't, no, that's right.
Yeah, it's a thing that caught me because I kind of missed it. I missed the intro when it didn't happen. I was like, wait a minute.
That is a great ending theme as well. So the only, catchy. Even
the only words
suck,
I can remember
so
where it goes like, France, so that's the only one I can ever remember. But yeah, he comes in.
All right, let's now go to the terrifying city. One Punch Man, episode 6. He wants to take a crack at the synopsis.
What, Anthony?
It's the thing I hate.
I did two episodes of Dragon
Ball
Super.
Did me a solid by watching it for me. So, as we are aware, Saitama is now a hero. C-class, but he's still a hero. And he finds out that he needs to do an heroic act or perhaps save someone from a bad guy, that kind of thing, at least every 10 days, or else his name will be removed from the hero registry. And he doesn't want that, because I guess he's getting paid and all that kind of stuff, and he does want to be a hero.
Well, he probably paid
a fee,
exactly. Like, you know.
He didn't want to
the
admin
take the
fee,
test twice.
Of course, it's always the admin fee. And Saitama is just running through the city at the speed he runs, which is very fast. And he can't find anything going on. There's literally nothing going on. And as he's strolling through the city, Sonic. Oh, what's the full name again?
Speed of Sound Sonic.
And Saitama. Can't remember it either. And he calls it like Jack-O-Lantern and all these ridiculous names. And it's great. And he says, look, I'm in a bad mood. And if anyone gets in my way, they'll get punched. I just found that hilarious. Just the delivery of the line. And who shows up?
Your man's reaction is pretty great as well.
Because he knows shit's going to go down if somebody gets punched. But tank-topped Tiger shows up, the young girl. And have we seen the tank-top gang so far in the series? Is this the first time?
No, this is the first guy.
Oh my god, there's more of this guy?
There's so many
of the tank topper army.
Yes!
That's major weekend by the sounds of it. And
brilliant.
He accuses one of them as being a criminal. And Saitama obviously thinks it's Sonic, but it's actually Saitama who's accused as being a criminal. And poor Tank Top Tiger, he gets a few shurikens to the face and they explode. And is he dead? I don't know. I mean,
he's up for the count. He's a hero.
I mean, if Osamatsu's anything to go off, if you get hit by a rocket and look that kind of ashy look, you're dead. And he's pretty ashy after the explosion. But either way, I'm hoping he's alive.
There's another guy waiting to be replaced anyway. Wearing a tank top, so he'd be fine.
I think one of the guys from the Attack on Titan episode, Monster, like one of those guys was in it, Lightning something or other. So I think they're probably okay.
Apparently he does show up in later on when he's with his
good. Okay. Good old Tiger. But yeah, Sonic starts going absolutely ape, and presumably someone dies in this situation because there's a lot of stuff going on. There's explosions, there's shurikens everywhere, and Saitama kind of thinks, you know what, I need to fight a bad guy. And he looks up, flies up in the air in an instant, and just gives him a chop to the back of the head or the neck or whatever else, and he goes flying to the ground.
Well, I did like the whole bit of him saving a kid from getting hit by a car flying around in an explosion. And he's like, I got to find some bad guy to fight. And then again, he looks up there and is like, wait
this'll
a minute.
Do.
He's throwing shurikens randomly into the street. That's illegal.
Bear in mind, when Sonic does actually attack Saitama earlier, Saitama catches the blade in his mouth and just chews through it.
Oh, yeah. He bites it off. That is
everything I want. Like, I could have stopped watching it there and I would have been happy for this episode. But anyway,
the reason Sonic was shooting the stuff was because, oh, you're a hero. Then you'll have to fight me if I start attacking people randomly.
Logic.
And yet it still takes Saitama so long. It's like, oh, wait, I guess I could fight him.
Bad guy. We're going to fight a bad guy. Right?
And there's got to have been a death count. There's chaos in that street. Absolute chaos.
I think they're working their way down the alphabet, and eventually there's just going to be ZDZ left.
Yeah. Like I was saying, I know you're seeing the exterior of Saitama's apartment building now, and you're seeing more and more like craters and like smashed buildings on Saitama.
I think they were using the same shots.
Fine, but after the runners for like the House of Evolution and whatever other villains have been fighting that week, all the damage is still there, not being fixed because there's too many monsters in the area.
I mean, like, who wants to fill in a pothole that goes all the way to the center of the earth where those people live?
Nobody. Subterranean.
By Genos, as it turns out by the end of the episode.
I suppose, he does an excellent job as well. If the hero thing doesn't work out, he's got a good job as a vote favor.
Then we get this big, well, not necessarily a big bit, but the Hero Association are kind of running down what each hero is doing where. We get some, I'm not going to go through each of them because...
Oh, let's go.
Oh, the dog. So, Watchdog. I want to mention Watchdog.
Watchdog, man.
I mean, that was the best one, but there are some great motherfucking costumes
When I first see it in the manga, I thought it was Saitama with a dog suit on. Because the face is very gormless Saitama face.
Well, he does appear to be like, he's apparently in the most dangerous city. And we see him on a pile of monsters that apparently just, and he says there's no
problem.
Oh
my gosh.
Even though.
But not anymore.
My imagination's running wild when he shows up. Oh, I can't wait.
Maybe a pee on you.
Who else? I mean, there's so many we get to see.
Tornado of Terror shows up in person.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going to send some people to this ghost town area of City Z. Because they think there's some sort of
monsters,
super dangerous monster living there.
Yeah.
Which will be the second half.
But an S-Clank? S-Class, such as her, is too much, so she doesn't get the opportunity.
Yeah. Who else did they mention? Iron Kong, I think. And
Snake.
Lightning Genji.
Mushroom. Horsebone.
Bojack Horseman.
Brilliant.
I'm sure there's a few more.
Oh, there's some more later on who are the reinforcements that the two guys who've been sent to Z call in.
But yeah, I suppose at this point we see...
But the big thing is Tornado, she wants to go, and they're like saying, no need to send an S-Class in. Yeah.
I think they just want to keep her out of the field by the look of
her. She's pretty strong.
She appears to be crazy.
She is S-Class. Then, I love this hero. Golden Ball. I love his design. I love his fighting style.
You like him?
You see him later on more, and I think he's a great hero. I think it's the best. Forget Saitama and Genos. This is the guy. These are the guys you want to follow. I love these two. I love these two so much. So Golden Ball, he's got like a slingshot that shoots a ball that turns into a like a dart, like a horrible missile thing that's...
It's like, what's it, shape, memory, gold.
Yes, so. And it would hurt. It even says it would go through 20 millimeters of steel, which isn't that much. It's only 2 centimeters.
It's more serious than you,
I guess so.
Yeah, can you do that with a friggin' slingshot? I don't think so.
I'll test it. Spring Mustachio, he's got like a... Well, he uses like a tissue from his jacket pocket, and he turns it into a sword, and it can coil up into a weird corkscrew and then, you know, go out really far. And anyway, this weird...
Mostly he's just a dude in a suit with a fabulous mustache.
Yes, he's very cool. He's very sweet. I mean, like... And this weird seaweed creature turns up. I can't remember if we ever get a name of this character.
No. I don't think so.
No. At one stage he calls himself the monster
ghost
of
town,
the ghost town, but it's like, I'm going to call myself that, and it's like, I don't want to live here.
But it's basically like a silhouette with an eye, or two eyes, depending on how the seaweed kind of sits on its head. And it controls all the seaweed, and it's pretty damn strong. It beats Golden Ball, it beats Mustachio. Mustachio takes a bad beating. He's like stripped of his clothes, he's bleeding, his tash is all kind of burnt looking.
At least he gets an attack in, though.
He lasts a lot longer than Golden Ball. He went down one shot. Like, Mustachio, obviously, I fought him for a while waiting for reinforcements to come.
He managed with his ultimate attack to damage one piece of seaweed, so it was kind of like, I guess the seaweed monster thing went the whole hog with him, you know?
But the seaweed creature takes them out, and they're like, well, I thought some strong monsters was going to show up. That was the whole idea it was there, because apparently monsters were going to meet in this town and, I guess, cause havoc. And you see Saitama walking down the street with his shopping, and, seaweed creature doesn't really do too well.
Well, no, plus when he sees the seaweed creature, it makes him realise that he forgot to...
He says, "Oh shit!" or "Oh crap!" and you think, "Well, he's not frightened." And then he reveals it. Oh shit! I forgot to get that. But then it cuts to Saitama laboring over a hot stove with a pot of boiling water with seaweed in it, and there's a huge box of it outside. And Genos comments it. You know, it's meant to be good for hair growth. And you know, there's that little joke.
Going through all, it's like, actually, I looked it up on the internet, actually, and it's actually not good for hair.
Just now, my brain, which I assume is just wired into the internet at all times.
Yeah, it's got a modem in there, sure.
By the way, where'd you get all the seaweed? There was a big sale on at the shop where I bought it.
I totally didn't kill a seaweed monster and then eat his head. That'd be weird.
I like to think Saitama kind of thinks it might work for the hair growth, because you see later on that the box at the door with all the seaweed's empty. So I like to think he's been wolfing it down. But anyway, a picture emerges of the town of City Z with a huge hole in a building, and the Hero Association gets it, and they're like, oh shit, there must be a big, big monster down there. And it's not really, it's just Saitama hitting something through.
Well, I mean, that's technically correct, though.
Yes.
He's the biggest monster down there.
Fabulous legend.
Yeah, and having not read this bit, that makes sense of things. It makes things which happen later on sort of reflect upon this.
I mean, how much up to date are you with the manga? Because I'm a bit of a chunk behind. Oh, you're
up to date. I'm up to date. But you know, there's a character who's kind of like the... he's the opposite of Saitama, in sort of.
What, he kicks things?
Two kicks.
No. But he's like the mirror image. He's like if Saitama went bad.
I can't remember. I don't think I've seen that far or read that. My weekly Shonen Jump is.
Must have done.
I'm still reading stuff from August. So that's I'm really backlogged.
I'm pretty sure he was in this.
Is it before actually, I don't want to say because Dwayne's not read and listeners, man.
I can pull out the earphones for a sec.
Don't worry about it. But yeah, we also see a bunch of the guys who were sent for reinforcements, who I think are Blue Fire, Smile Man, D-Pad. I can't remember who the other one was.
I was about to say, everyone's got such
they all have
names,
awful names.
These guys, the reinforcements.
No, they all have awful names.
Golden Ball's a great name.
I like Golden Ball.
I didn't recognize the guy Golden Fire, because he was up again later, and he's this whole thing. He's like, a gadget up his arm that makes fire, but it appears like he's shooting fire. It's like, ooh.
Okay.
It's kind of a...
Tornado's a cool name.
Dumbass, really. Oh, not that I know. Is she like the... Oh, I know. Which one is the...
The one with the black hair.
Tornado. Lizard. Oh, you see a brief glimpse of Blizzard of Hell. Yeah. And her gang.
The gang.
Yeah.
And then she does the end credits.
Yeah, I'm just a bit
saying she'll be in next week, but then one of our henchmen says, "No, we're not in that line."
Oh, is that because there's no episode next week?
No. It's just because you didn't show up to us later in the comics.
Okay.
Or have any particular role.
I really like the joke of Genos basically reading Twitter comments on how pretty he looks.
Yes.
And he's like, I don't give a fuck, they'll just judge me based on how I look.
Yes,
and Saitama's just going like, you motherfucker.
It's because his training is basically, he's bluffing, he's like nicking stuff out of King's book that King apparently wrote, this S-class hero.
Yeah, but when Saitama does is sit around all day and like with his feet up, and like Genos is just sketching him, is like, I gotta see his training regime, gotta get the lying down position exactly right.
Which again, I wish I'd read this bit before I read the bit where King actually shows up.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
that adds extra levels to King.
Just
as
you
well.
Wait, Dwayne. Just you wait.
So basically, he's basically told Saitama, oh, you gotta try and get into the top 10 in S class.
Yeah, that's his goal. That's his goal.
Genos, Saitama's told Genos that, yeah, rather.
And also Saitama is the last position of hero, so like he's the worst guy at the start of this
episode.
He moves up
a rank, though. 17 places he gains,
something like that, yeah. Presumably because Sonic has got loads of criminal
records against him. Assassin, murdered people, and yeah.
Not because Saitama's actually the monster they're afraid of him.
They haven't figured that out yet, yeah. I guess because if Genos keeps fixing up the outside, it isn't going to look as wrecked outside his house. So it'll be like him accidentally covering up the clues that are the damage.
Still the best series.
Yeah.
Forget this Osamatsu
Let's wrap things up with Concrete Revolutio, episode 5.
Okay, get a seat, people.
I've still not have you watched any of this yet?
Oh,
but
no!
Go ahead, lay it on me.
Japan Beast History Part 2. Less of a history lesson this week, though.
Yeah. More so, we're kind of stuck in the current...
the 67 time period. So... what we do see of the past is we get a bit more of Jiro's past, where we see him during the attack of the Mecha King
Mecha
Kong.
Gone.
That's it.
Yeah.
Where he's cheering.
I did not get that until I saw it written down.
The monster on.
You know, the Mega Gone. Yes. Mega Gone. I feel very slow for not getting that.
Yeah, well, apparently he was cheering the monster on when he saw it.
Because he's been stuck in a lab because he's got a monster in him or something?
Well, I think by the end, it's just because that's the natural reaction to humans when they see these beasts.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, fuck them up, giant monster.
It's like, whatever meaning there is behind them, all we really want to see is these giant monsters kicking the shit out of the scenery.
I thought that was a really interesting way to interpret the kind of boom in kaiju stuff, and also to kind of tie it in with the student protests. It's like the way that Godzilla started off as, you know, it's like, oh, nuclear war is this terrible monster, this natural disaster that you can't stop. And then it kind of turns it into, yeah, fucking Godzilla's awesome. He's the hero of the people. Mm. And it's basically that kind of turnaround. They're at that point in it, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. They just had a good PR company to make Kaiju cool for
exactly.
For the purple.
Yeah. So what happens at the start of this episode, hinted at last episode, is, what's his name? Master Sigma, the American superhero.
Master Ultima.
Master Ultima, rather. There you go. He is a genius scientist born from a spaceman and an earthling. He was returned from Mars, and he's basically weaponized kaiju.
Yep. The kaiju on the... What do you call those ships that they launch planes from?
Carriers?
Yeah, little kaiju that are on that, and they have all the stars and stripes and shit on them. I thought that was fucking awesome. That's a really cool idea. So they're basically being launched at motherfuckers like torpedoes or whatever.
Yeah, Master Ultima reminds me of something, but I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I couldn't get that one either.
what his character design looks like. and one is stationed in Okinawa, and it gets killed, and they bury it at sea, and the Superhuman Bureau go to investigate. but it's gone. Because also happening at this time is someone has hired an advertising agency to infiltrate the student movement and make people start liking beasts and sort of turn the tide of public opinion against superheroes. Because last week we learnt that the Superhuman Bureau and, or the guy in charge of the Superhuman Bureau and two other gas aliens or beings are manipulating things to make these beasts appear so that superheroes will fight them and become more popular.
Yeah, they're using kaiju to make the superheroes, the Sentai kind of human guys, look popular. But then these guys have a reverse, like, I guess a positive kaiju advertising campaign.
It's the opposite way around. I guess you
gotta get them in with the kids.
Step four, profit?
Well, I think
we don't know what the motivation is, because apparently this is the idea of this advisor, Satoshi, who apparently has been with them since before the war. But he doesn't, he looks old and young at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, he's got like a young character design, but grey hair and carries a walking stick. And apparently the Bureau are his enemy. That's what he tells the lady from the ad agency.
Well, based on this episode, you can kind of say it's like, yeah, they kind of fucking are, dude. As far as I can tell, like, basically the agency are the man who are trying to, like, put down people and trying to make their own fucking, bring their own guys forward, like, make the superheroes look good, whereas they're doing it in such a fucked up way.
Yeah. Well, like, literally when, like, the Bureau come by to try and deal with the monster in behind the student protest, they're like,
yeah,
look, where everybody? It's the establishment. Get out of here. They call it the establishment.
They're not subtle about it.
To be fair, Amy and Kiko do the worst job of infiltrating the student protests.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's like, hey, guys, we heard there was your rebellion leader around here.
You a cop? It's like, well, I'm not a cop.
Kiko is brilliantly awkward in this episode, particularly the scene later on after Jiro's recovering, and she completely misreads the situation.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious as to how they're going to do her, because at the moment they've actually done a really good job of keeping the kind of innocent, magical girl character that she is going. Yeah, she's just really like, I'm really going to be awkward around here, you guys. It's pretty great.
But yeah, so they inject Jiro with blood from kaiju.
Yeah, it was the kid from the last episode.
The small Gigon.
Yeah, and I didn't expect that from him. Like, that was really like, holy fuck.
And he goes berserk, and the little monster from the previous episode is eaten by the military monster, and he turns into like a cyborg version, giant cyborg version of the little monster.
It's not a combine, somewhere.
And he attacks this rampaging Jiro. So it's kind of the reverse of what was happening in the previous episodes. It's the kaiju stopping the superhero.
What I liked as well, instead of Jiro doing whatever the hell he did the last episode, it's his frigging centaur car.
Yeah, and that goes berserk with him, doesn't it?
It kind of
does like an Eva type.
It grows a different kind of face and that kind of thing, yeah.
Which makes me wonder whether that's connected to his powers.
Yeah, is it actually a robot car, or is he using his powers to make it a robot car?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. It's interesting.
Yeah, because Amy says that in this that there's a beast inside him, but then she thinks all men have got beasts inside them. But I think at this point we kind of have to assume there's some sort of kaiju or something.
There's something going on.
At least.
Yeah, there's something going on with him, all right. It's also revealed that I've forgotten the young girl's name.
Which one?
The magical girl.
Kiko.
She discovers from the magazines that were kind of lying around, a bunch of people looked like they'd been blanked out of the magazines.
Yes, and what happened was Amy had taken the pictures and turned into them, and she was the woman at the Beastly Wave radio in the previous episode. She was part of that.
So she was actually being like
one of the heads of the organization.
Yeah.
The DA were pretending to be criminals to make the cops look better.
Yeah, alternative was setting them up all along. I joke about this on Twitter during the week. Some people are going on about computer, and I thought, well, that's precisely what's happening. Turn
that's exactly what the
up.
Fuck is happening. Yeah. Fucking brilliant.
Yeah. And Kick-Ad decides not to tell Jiro because it would destroy him.
Yeah, if he thought he was working for the bad guys.
And it seems like everybody's doing that. Everybody's not telling him the truth because they either it'll destroy him or it'll make him go super berserk, maybe.
Yeah. Mm.
And so, yes, they've got this conscientious objector kaiju on a march through Tokyo.
It's doing surprisingly well for a giant monster on a peace march.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know how the kaiju are like the, you know, they can be like symbolic of a certain kind of thing or principle or something like that. Like, you know, like Godzilla's the specter of nuclear war or like that. Like the monster they have now, the mecha gag on whatever it is, it's kind of like the symbol of like student oppression or whatever that, or student like uprising.
It's a symbol of student oppression, I guess, because he was like baby Gigan turned big, but also because he's half American militarized kaiju, he's a soldier who fought in a war he didn't ask for. And
yes,
it's kind of like, I don't want to fucking fight for the man, for America or for Japan. And it's just like, the advertising company's doing a good job on promoting all the things this monster represents.
Yeah, he's kind of running on, like, you know, like they keep saying last week, you know, about, like, no, kaiju's kind of like a natural disaster. Or like, what's the meaning behind it? So I tended to take that ball and running with it, so to speak.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, yes, yeah, so the Bureau's plan to thwart this conscious objective beast is to blow it up and make it angry.
Yeah, because if they send heroes after it, the heroes will look like the bad guys.
Yes.
But if they blow it up and get it pissed off and it goes on a rampage, the kaiju is the bad guy and the heroes will be the good guys again. They're trying to make it a kind of a simple moral play thing again.
Yeah.
But their plan to blow it up is just like, oh, it's nighttime, so there'll be minimum casualties. I'm just like, guys, that's not cool.
Minimal casualties. It's like, well, this guy does not give a dang. He just wants results.
Yeah, there's a hint here as well that Jaguar might be able to see into the future as well.
Yeah, he mentions like, oh, there'll be a train passing by there at 6:35.
I think it's something like, no, he says everything can be calculated, so he's probably like calculating the probability of all this happening or something.
Yeah, but, yeah.
According to the English website, he can also turn into some sort of Jaguar-type beast, hence the nickname they give him. But we've not seen him do that yet.
Yeah, I don't know when that came up, unless they release some design thing, or they're just getting it off the name.
Yeah, there's no design for it on the page, but there is an English website. That's part of the official website, which gives you these character descriptions, and it mentions that you can do that. He's not done it yet, but he does explain why he's called Jaguar. There is a tokusatsu hero who was like a Jaguar man around the same time.
Mm.
So they're probably pulling from that as well. Just haven't seen them pull it from yet. But it goes slightly wrong. The explosion doesn't go off at the right point. And so, of course, the chief has the gas has to leave his human body and take control of a train.
It's got a terrifying Thomas the Tank Engine face in front of it as well.
When I saw the bit in the notes where it's like, he's some sort of gas man. Also, Thomas the Tank Engine was around at the time. And I was like, the fuck, why Thomas the Tank Engine? And then I was like, oh, he's a train now. Okay.
There was also that, I can't remember the name of it, that we talked about, the early 70s anime based on a Japanese version of Thomas the Tank Engine type thing. And I wonder whether that book series came out around that time.
I would be curious if when he started going like whatever the Japanese equivalent of chugga 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 was like, is that what Thomas the Tank Engine meant in Japan?
Maybe.
I can't wait to see anime adapt Ivor the Engine because that'll be just lovely. So pleasant.
Yeah, and he goes berserk and some of the students run away, but some of them start sort of relishing in the carnage it's causing, which distresses the woman from the advertising agency. I'm not sure we've had a name yet.
I'm not sure if they've named her. I feel like they have.
Maybe they have. I can't remember.
It might have been on a name badge or something. We just saw for a minute.
Yeah, she's in next week's episode as well. So, and she's like, "What are you doing?" She can't understand why they're relishing. And like the head of the Beastly Wave radio says, "Yeah, it's illogical. You find it."
So, I mean, like, I was just going to try and confirm with that, because they started doing the thing that the press, again, King Kong reference, when they shine their torches in his eyes, he gets really upset.
Yes.
So they all start doing that on purpose, just to get him more riled up.
Yeah.
And I was like, are they trying to piss him off? And it's like, okay, I just want to make sure that is the case, because I was as confused as her there.
Yeah, so, and he fires spikes off, kills the guy from the Beastly Wave radio. But he's almost like he wants to be killed by a monster at this point.
Yeah, he only sees monsters as a thing for destruction. There's no logic to it. It's just destruction. So he's perfectly, I guess, fine with being exploded by the monster.
And then Jiro turns up and kills the monster. And it's so important we don't get any ending credits this week.
Serious business.
Yeah. I don't know, what was his, centaur car, I don't know how to say that without sounding like I'm slurring the words. It had like a cape thing, like him this time.
It had like, you know, cause one of the arms got torn off by the monster in an earlier encounter, and it just had like some kind of, for some reason, a bandage over it. But the bandage kind of came and kind of fluttered around and kind of caught on the neck, so it got like a cool scarf.
Yeah, I figured that was supposed to kind of look like him as well, or maybe something else. I couldn't figure it out. But shit go down.
He probably fucked that monster up something fierce.
Yep.
Like, it was really pretty gruesome, you know. Like, it's lying in a bloody mess, and you got the kid going, "Come on, go on, get up, shine the light in your eyes." And it's like, no, he's just
that monster's gone, dude.
He's in a heap.
I still have no idea what's happening.
It's hard to describe, dude.
Yeah, it's a pretty depressing episode. But even though the good guys have essentially won by the end of the episode, you're thinking, are they really the good guys?
Well, yeah, they're not really the good guys, are they?
No. Which kind of makes you realize why Jiro's turned against them at some point, but we're still wondering what is the key.
What exactly happens, yeah.
Which of these many things are keeping from him? Is it one that caused him to repel?
Because at the very end, Amy returns to his dad with these samples of his blood. Mm. And I'm like,
yes, we haven't collected derivatives. Samples in a long while. Yes, blood in a fridge.
Yeah, and it says it's some sort of experiment. So were these beasts being made from his blood?
Oh, fuck. That would be great.
Yeah.
there's so much going on in this fucking show.
Because it's not his blood strictly. It says blood derivatives, Jiro Itayoshi. So.
I mean, that's what they were suggesting by Gagan anyway, that you keep making new ones or using his blood to make a giant jellyfish monster or something.
And the little one was very friendly with him as well. So I think that was in the previous episode.
Like, yeah, that's true.
He recognized that he was a beast too.
Okay.
Yeah. Not good things going on.
Well, I mean, like, good show.
It is, but yeah.
In the context, no.
Downer, man. Well, the 60s are over. You got to get into the realism of the 70s.
But next week, the Beatles.
Ooh.
They're in next week's episode.
All right.
I'm loving this show. I mean, like, One Punch Man and Mr. Otsumatsu are fantastic, but this is freaking really close to both. It's got me well hooked anyway.
Yeah, I think the writing is just, it hits me in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
That sort of taking pop culture and tearing it apart and putting it back together in a different order.
Hmm.
Yeah, well worth checking out, Anthony.
I gather, but... One day.
The longer you leave it,
I know.
Yeah, it's only five episodes of this thing.
I know. But there's also a lovely Muko I could catch up on.
That's only one.
Oh, there's six episodes available. I could be deep in Muko.
Okay, I think that ends this week's episode of Let's Go. Be back here next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at Secret of the Sailor Madness, blogspot.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Das Vidanya.
Au revoir. Bye.